It's Wednesday, October 28th. They called 911 for help, then the helpers shot their son. We start here. A police shooting ignites Philadelphia.
I don't even have to give him that many shots.
The person gunned down was allegedly wielding a knife, while the family and now protesters say that's no excuse. If you haven't sent in your mail ballot yet, is it too late?
Within the next day or two, I think that window does close.
It depends on what state you're in and what the courts say, the legal battles that could define this election. And ignore 32 million voters at your own peril.
It definitely won't be for the one that just stood there and watched it happen and didn't do much to help us.
Why this year has galvanized Latinos unlike any other. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Across the country, you can feel this tension right now. No one knows who's about to win the presidential election. A lot of people aren't even sure what election day will look like, particularly in battleground states like Pennsylvania.
The Trump campaign is now suing the city of Philadelphia after its representatives were not allowed to enter election offices to watch as people registered to vote and filled out mail-in ballots. Now,
and like many states, Pennsylvania really feels like a different world depending on whether you live in a big city or a small town.
Bad things happen in Philadelphia. Bad things.
Well, President Trump is confident he will win the central part of the state. In cities like Philadelphia, you are seeing these huge lines for early voting, with people saying they are frustrated with division, with lack of health care, with bias in policing.
I'm urging my supporters to go into the polls and watch very carefully, because that's what has to happen. I am urging them to do it.
Those early voting sites actually closed yesterday. It was the last day to vote in person before Election Day. But right before that, the city was rocked by a police shooting, of which we are still seeing the aftermath this morning. I want to start the day with ABC's Eva Pilgrim, who's in Philadelphia right now. Eva, I should warn listeners, some of the sound is disturbing, but can you walk me through what set the city off like this?
So, Brad, on Monday afternoon, police received a call for help. Walter Wallace Jr.'s family tells us that they called because he was having a manic episode. He's bipolar. And when the officers arrived on the scene, they immediately say they told the officers that he was having a manic episode.
Yo, this crazy. You gonna smoke? Yo!
Wallace apparently had a knife in his hand. In the video that you see, there were lots of neighbors that were out on the block at the time this all went down. You can see the officers sort of retreating. Wallace with the knife in his hand. They kind of go round and round, and then he keeps approaching the officers. And the officers opened fire, killing him. He died, was announced dead at the hospital.
Oh, my God. Bro, they just killed him in front of me. Oh, God.
Yo.
But the big story on Action News is developing as we continue to follow the fallout from yesterday's deadly shooting by police officers in West Philadelphia.
And there were protests.
Crowds confronting Philadelphia police as officers lined up surrounding Southwest detectives at 55th and Pine in anticipation of unrest.
Those protests, as the night progressed, the temperature of them changed.
They are dumping trash cans, throwing stuff around as they're going.
We saw looting, businesses that were broken into.
Oh, he hit a cop. Oh, my God, he hit a cop.
One police officer was even hit by a car.
Oh, I'm out.
A female officer's leg was broken after she was hit by a vehicle.
And almost 100 people were arrested on that first night. Philadelphia police really trying to ramp up the police presence, trying to keep control of the city to maintain peace and order.
But can I ask kind of a basic question, Eva? What does the family think should have been done? Because I'd imagine if a lot of people saw a guy wielding a knife going towards police officers with it after they asked him to put it down, people would not be surprised that he gets shot, mental issues or not.
Well, the family's lawyers told us that they were expecting an ambulance to show up and that they thought that he was going to be taken for health. purposes to a mental health facility for help. And that was sort of the whole thought behind why they called for
help. Oh, like
help.
You call 911, you're not calling the police.
Not necessarily. And that wasn't their expectation. The police just happened to be the first ones, they say, on the scene there.
To me, that officers who are trained in visible ink properly should notice certain things when they arrive at a scene. Especially when you have his wife tells you, stand down, officers. He's manic. He's bipolar.
You don't even have to give him that many shots.
Why was the fact that they first used, the first thing them officers did was pull their weapon on that man?
That could have pulled out a taser.
And a lot of the people in the community really outraged at the idea that these officers didn't have tasers, that their first line of defense was to shoot this man. They shot approximately 14 rounds.
Every police officer is not issued a taser at this time. When we went back during this last budget cycle, we requested additional funding.
The police commissioner said, you know, the thing that people misconstrue and misunderstand is that not all police officers in Philadelphia have tasers. So while some officers have tasers and have gone through that training, there are still officers in the city that they don't have that as an option.
So with that said, yes, it's common for officers to respond to domestic disturbance or any type of call with a gun because it's one of the tools that we carry on our tool belt.
And so these two officers who arrived on the scene, both did not have a taser, is what we are told, and that they only had their issued weapons on them.
And so what's the moving forward then? What is the vibe in the city? You said they're ramping up police presence. Are you getting a sense of what protesters are saying and what the city's saying back to them?
Well, there has been a long discussion in Philadelphia that something needs to change as far as how you deal with these types of calls. The police commissioner saying that we need to figure out a different way to change our training to deal with the current climate. And one thing I think you should keep in mind is this neighborhood is a neighborhood that has long had clashes with police.
It has been 35 years since one of the darkest days in Philadelphia's history.
And it goes back to the 80s when the MOVE movement, the Philadelphia police actually bombed a home about two or three blocks from where this shooting happened.
11 people were killed, including five children. Two city blocks were burned and 61 homes were destroyed.
And so that, is a long-lasting memory by lots of people in this neighborhood, and it's a part of the fabric of that community and that distrust that they have towards police.
They were ill-prepared. They were sent into a situation ill-prepared. They didn't have the training and they didn't have the tools to do the job effectively, and as such, a man was murdered.
You know, one of the things that someone said to us, these officers aren't from this neighborhood. They come into this neighborhood and they're scared because they're not used to being here. They don't know these people. They don't know how this neighborhood works. And the idea that there needs to be some people who have a true understanding of the community in that neighborhood.
Help my son and help my family. That's all I'm sending out is the SOS to help, not to hurt and cause no chaos. Violent, looting, fire, all this thing, because I wasn't brought up like that.
More turmoil last night, still getting a sense of the fallout from that. Eva Pilgrim, who used to be a local reporter in Philadelphia, now back in the city today. Eva, thanks so much for filling us in.
Thanks, Brad.
This morning, ABC News and the Washington Post have two new polls out taking a look at two key swing states, Michigan and Wisconsin. In Michigan, likely voters say they favor Joe Biden by 7 points.
There's no better, no more appropriate place to hold a drive-in rally than in Motor City, USA.
In Wisconsin, the lead for Biden is 17 points, perhaps in part because COVID-19 is now surging there faster than ever.
And you know what? We win Wisconsin. We win the whole ball game.
But this poll in Wisconsin was being conducted right as the Supreme Court was making an important decision, telling Wisconsin voters, if you're mailing a ballot, you not only have to send it by Election Day, it's got to be received by Election Day. It's a big deal for Wisconsin voters. It's also a big deal because other cases are about to come before the court with a new justice on the bench. Let's check in with ABC Supreme Court contributor Kate Shaw. Kate, this Wisconsin case was an important rule change, like barely a week from Election Day. Are we seriously going to be deciding the rules of how we count votes this late in the game?
You know, it is kind of wild, Brad, that these cases are still coming fast and furious in the federal courts and the state courts and even in the Supreme Court. So just in the last week, we had decisions out of the Supreme Court, one from Pennsylvania, one from Wisconsin, and they went in different directions. The Pennsylvania case involved the court basically letting an extension stand so that absentee ballots, at least right now, can be counted if they arrive by Friday after Election Day.
In a split decision, the justices rejected the GOP's argument that mail-in ballots received after Election Day should not be counted.
But as you said, the Supreme Court went the other way in the Wisconsin case.
The U.S. Supreme Court ruling tonight that absentee ballots must be in the hands of clerks by 8 p.m. on election night or they won't be counted.
So Wisconsin voters are not going to have that kind of extension in place when it's election week this time. So those two cases just came down. There's another case out of North Carolina that is pending before the Supreme Court right now. The Pennsylvania GOP, which lost last week before the Supreme Court, has renewed its request to the Supreme Court, I assume hoping that it will get a different response now that Amy Coney Barrett has been confirmed to the Supreme Court. So there may well be a lot of decisions still to come in the next week and certainly after the election.
Well, and you mentioned Amy Coney Barrett. Does a 9-member court change the game when Republicans or Democrats look at these cases?
It could. It definitely could.
It is the job of a judge to resist her policy preferences. It would be a dereliction of duty for her to give in to them.
I think there's a threshold question, which is whether she's going to participate in these cases at all. There's already a recusal motion pending in this Pennsylvania case, basically asking her to recuse from participating in the case. And the argument is something like, you know, she was rushed through this confirmation process kind of on the explicit justification that she needed to be in place in order to decide an election dispute, and that background could create the appearance of impropriety or bias.
20 years ago, I was part of the legal team that litigated Bush versus Gore and went to the Supreme Court. 37 days, the country did not know who the president was going to be. And if we had a 4-4 court, it could have dragged on for weeks and months.
But of course, whether to recuse in a particular case is entirely within the discretion of a justice. And, you know, Amy Coney Barrett was noncommittal during her confirmation hearing about whether she would participate at all.
While it is always the decision of an individual justice, it always happens after consultation with the full court. So I can't offer an opinion on recusal without short-circuiting that entire process.
A, we don't know if she's going to decide these cases. But B, if she does, I think that President Trump, whose campaign is bringing the cases, basically seeking to shut down these expansions of absentee voting and other kinds of voting, has a better chance of succeeding than he did, say, a week ago.
Tonight, this number. More than 90 million Americans have requested mail-in ballots, and only about half of them have sent them back in.
What are the biggest things to weigh here? Like, I guess I'm wondering, for a person who's still got a mail ballot sitting in their living room right now, it's filled out, ready to go, should they be sending it or not? Like, what would take away here in the last week?
You know, but I think it depends on what state you're in. But I also think that because there is so much uncertainty and so much ongoing litigation around when absentee ballots will be counted, a lot of experts are saying that the window has either closed or is about to close in terms of when you can return your ballot and be confident that it will be counted.
It's now important to return your ballots in person. Don't rely on the mail, regardless of what state you're in. Get your ballots in by your state's deadline.
So, you know, within the next day or two, I think that window does close, and it would be better to find another way to vote. So either to drop your ballot off by hand, or potentially not to vote absentee and actually to go vote early in person, or to vote on election day in person. But because of potential slow mail and the potential for further litigation that might invalidate ballots that arrive after election day, it is much safer if you haven't already returned your absentee ballot, you know, either to return it today or to find another way to vote.
It may take a while. 34 states will not even begin to count those millions of mailed-in votes until Election Day. One of those is Texas, where polls show Biden and Trump in a dead heat.
So one last thing I'll say is that, you know, states have approached this issue of how to change election rules because of COVID in different ways. And from the perspective of the Supreme Court, it matters a lot where those changes have come from. So if a state legislature has extended its ordinary deadlines, the Supreme Court is very unlikely to second guess that kind of decision. But if a federal court is the one that has ordered an extension, the court is much more likely to be skeptical. A state court ruling is more likely to withstand scrutiny. But, you know, I think a lot remains to be seen in terms of what the Supreme Court is going to do. And one big bottom line issue is late returning ballots are much more vulnerable to challenge and to successful challenge than votes that are cast in person or that have already been mailed.
Some great answers there to frequently asked questions. I'm getting others from people. One of them, what do you do if you're worried about mailing your ballot? Well, remember, just about everywhere you can drop it off at your county office, and at least 38 states have those ballot drop boxes somewhere in your county. What if you requested an absentee ballot, but now you'd rather just vote in person? That is allowed, but different states have different rules for it, so you should check. Lastly, what do you do if you want to change your vote? That's much more difficult. The word you're thinking of, the word that you want to Google today, is spoiling your ballot. Again, you want to check with your state because not many states allow that. Experts say the best thing to do, stick to your original voting plan. And if you have questions, check the How to Vote guide at 538.com. Kate Shaw, thanks so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Next up on Start Here, they're the largest non-white voting group in America. So why aren't they courted like it? Back after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt cartridge.
What were you thinking that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
One of the side effects of the 2016 election was this renewed emphasis on the phrase working class whites. Right? Working class whites appear to be the key to President Trump's victory, so both sides worked really hard to appeal to them in the next 4 years. Well, remember back when Mitt Romney lost the election in 2012? That wasn't at all the storyline. The GOP did this big autopsy to figure out why they lost, and their conclusion was not about working class whites. It was about appealing to diverse groups of people, particularly one of the fastest growing groups of people in the U.S., Latinos.
These last 4 years have been really tough, particularly for the Latino community.
Well, guess what? The Latino population in the U.S. has only grown since then, but you wouldn't know it by how political operatives talk. So this week, ABC News Live has put together some incredible programming highlighting the importance and the power of the Latino vote, how that's evolved, and what the phrase the Latino vote even means. ABC senior White House correspondent Cecilia Vega was one of the hosts of the special last night. Cecilia, I think it's easy to fall into this trap of talking about any ethnic group as if it's like this small pocket of American life, because that's not the way to think about Latinos in this country at all.
Yeah, and I think that that's why it's been such a hard demographic for politicians and pollsters and fundraisers to really grab a hold of.
So what do you prefer? It's very interesting. Some say, call us Latino. Others say, call us Hispanic. Others say, call us whatever the hell you want. We love you.
I mean, we've been hearing about this elusive Latino vote for decades now, and this is going to be the year of the Latino vote. It's always been the year of the Latino vote for so many politicians. And it's a complicated community. We're talking about a huge swath of the country.
These last 4 years have been really tough, particularly for the Latino community. We've been antagonized by this administration.
But just think about the Latinos that you know in our lives, me including them. You know, you've got different backgrounds from California, different immigrant experiences in Texas and Arizona. And then you've got Caribbeans and Cubans on the East Coast. And I'm giving you in the most general sense.
So you will be surprised that there's a lot of people in Florida and Philadelphia.
voting for the Republican Party. That doesn't mean necessarily that they are Republican, but that the candidate that is there is the one that promised a brighter future for them. That's all.
Politicians want to tackle and want to grab that Latino community by the horns, so to speak, but it's really not a one-size-fits-all group, and that's why they've been such a hard group for politicians to win over.
And because of that, because it's not like a monolith or something, do you get a sense of what, I mean, are there blocks to be sussed out? Are there trends that you're noticing with how campaigns see Latinos maybe in different states or in different parts of the country?
Well, the biggest trend is the population size right now. I mean, we are talking about a huge group of voters that is up for grabs, the biggest one that we've ever seen in this country. 32 million eligible Latinos can vote in 2020.
It means we need everyone to get out and vote. I can't do this without you. Path to victory in November is contingent upon Latino voters.
The people that we've talked to in our special say that can make or break a state, a swing state. Because of the population growth, we are now talking about swing states that were never considered swing states before.
By the next presidential election, the number of Latinos in Texas is expected to surpass the white population.
Texas, for example, we are seeing basically a dead heat between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. Right. Republicans would turn red in the face 20 years ago if we told them that there would be a Democrat that could be up for grabs in a state like Texas. And so really it's the sheer magnitude of the number that really is the big thing this year.
Well, and so that makes me wonder about issues then, Cecilia. I mean, you know, voters are going to have similar issues. Like, that does not always fall along racial or ethnic lines. But are there issues that you think are getting underplayed when it comes to Latino voters in this country that voters really will care about more than what they're being served?
Healthcare is really important to me because my dad actually was sick when he was undocumented and couldn't get any sort of healthcare.
Well, there are. The economy, healthcare, those are the top priorities for Latino voters.
Don't let it dominate you. Don't be afraid of it.
That message after the president left Walter Reed Medical Center was a gut punch for Lucero.
He's privileged. Did every single person that lost their lives receive the same treatment that he did? They didn't. He had all these resources that none of us did.
But you've been talking about this in your reporting, and I've been talking about it in mine. Latinos have been particularly hard hit, frankly, devastated by the coronavirus.
I think I always knew who I would not vote for. And it definitely won't be for the one that just stood there and watched it happen and didn't do much to help us.
And that, we've seen in polling, is an issue that is driving folks to the polls as well. You know, the real issue right now, I think, is not so much the topical ones. It's whether Latinos will turn out, though. Fewer than half of all eligible Latinos voted in the last presidential election.
Who will you be voting for in November?
I already voted. I voted for Mr. Trump.
Why Trump?
The economy. Bottom line.
But listen to this, Brad. We were just looking at the numbers. So far, we've already seen more than twice as many Latinos vote early compared to this time 4 years ago. And that is a number that Democrats are certainly hanging on right now.
Wow. With still 6 days to go until Election Day. All right, Cecilia Vega, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad. See ya.
And one last thing. The best-selling item for Halloween this year is not a costume or a political mask. It's a really tall skeleton.
So we went into Home Depot, and I looked over and saw that the first thing I saw was the skeleton. And I just told him that I didn't care if we bought another thing for the rest of the year, that I had to have that.
You might have seen this around. A 12-foot-tall skeleton from Home Depot with movable joints, light-up eyes that follow you around. It's become a must-have purchase.
It's the coolest Halloween decoration that I have currently.
Spooky, scary skeletons.
It was already pretty expensive at $300, and yet it entirely sold out, creating a secondhand market that can now fetch over $1,000.
Okay, TikTok, I don't ask you for much, but if 300 people could just Venmo me $1, I will buy the 12-foot skeleton from Home Depot.
Some people have entire 12-foot-tall skeleton families on their yards.
They have the skeleton. Holy s***.
We've seen frenzies before during holiday shopping, but that's usually for a toy like a Furby or a Tickle Me Elmo. So why a lawn decoration that can't even fit under your ceiling?
Please be advised, the boxes are massive.
Oh my God, he's just a towering inferno.
Well, for one, it got a lot of attention when the Kardashians posted about it. But more importantly, think about the holidays this year. Lots of families are avoiding trick-or-treating. Officials in Philadelphia, New York, Illinois, and others are now recommending families avoid traveling for Thanksgiving or even Christmas. All this to say, costumes and parties, that's not where it's at this year. That money can all go to decorating your house. And you imagine a lot of people are thinking, while I'm at it, I might as well decorate with something really creepy that can stare down the neighbor from a block away.
Oh my gosh, look at those glowing eyes. Your dad's gonna freak out.
If you own one of these, if you have a 12-foot tall skeleton in your yard, please send us a picture. I really want to see that. Or, I mean, heck, just show off whatever awesome Halloween decorations you've got this year. If you're into it, maybe we can share some of the best ones. We are at Start Here ABC on Instagram and Facebook. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia, Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.